Jazz Crusaders with Trance Dance. It's from the 1966 Festival album, a compilation of live performances at the Newport and Pacific Jazz Festivals that year. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and seems you missed me. Well, we had some technical work to do, and so that was done. And today is our first day back. The technical folks, as you know, PRN moved recently, and new wires had to be strung, and you know, that technical stuff. I have no clue what happens in the world of technology, but it took them that much time to get it together and to test and retest and whatnot. So it's all done. But in the meantime, thank you for your notes and your comments and inquiries as to how I be doing. I be doing all right. Well, actually, I have one more surgery to go. This was a very technical thing that happened with my arm, and in fact, my whole right side, but mostly my arm, and in this fall, and bruising of ribs and all of that stuff. That's well taken care of, but there's some trouble with the arm and hand, because the fractures are in the hand and in the wrist and in the forearm, and you never realize how you need these things to be in good working order, especially when it's your dominant hand. But I'm going to pull through it, and thank you so much for your prayers and your support. I really do appreciate it. Well, a very interesting program today, seeing that it seems as if I ought to strongly consider doing the hottest business around, and that is start a foundation and pretend I'm running it and doing something good. It's the best gig going. I mean, Ivanka Trump has announced that she, you know, in her travels now as the free-floating U.S. Secretary of State / ambassador to the world, after meeting up with Angela Merkel in this women's global meeting, has kind of announced that she's going to start her own foundation. And she has already gotten some very good response from the World Bank and from major global financing institutions, including the IMF and other places that could easily fork up a couple of $1 million if she hits them up for it. And so that's the newest foundation coming along. We know that the president started earlier in the week, a nice trip, a pilgrimage, as it were, to Chicago to rekindle his connections to where he got started as a politician. He got started as a community organizer. He's going back home. And there's a reason he's going back home after his second stint as president concluded, and he took off for 3 months, and now he's ready to get back down to work. And number one on his agenda is building that Obama Foundation. Oh, my gosh. Now, the interesting thing about the Obama Foundation is that it was originally assessed at millions of dollars. And now the latest reporting that we have is that it's probably going to be costing more than $1.2 or $1.3 billion. So that introduction, coming home to Chicago, symbolically was a way of starting the process of raising money for his foundation, which will then fund the Obama Shrine, which will be a testimony to his legacy as President of the United States. Very interesting things going on in the world of foundations, but I want to just start today's program talking about a familiar foundation, familiar to us, and that is the Clinton Foundation. Now that Hillary and Bill Clinton have taken all those restorative walks in the woods and rested up from their bruising 2016 presidential campaign, you'd think they'd be putting things in order at the Family Foundation, as you recall, officially named the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation, to comply fully with the U.S. and international law, especially since then-candidate Donald Trump had practically put a prosecutorial bounty on their heads for using the foundation as a pay-to-play political operation. To avoid the appearance of donors receiving political favors, the foundation said it would shut down its Clinton Global Initiative by April the 15th this year, letting go 22 staff and concentrating instead on its other philanthropic projects. But Charles Ortel, who has been investigating the Clinton Foundation for more than 2 years, that's all he's been doing. He's had no life for more than 2 years, two plus years, and has been reporting on its findings on lead stories, as you know. He returns to give us the latest report on the Clinton Foundation and related issues. And there's much that we'll be talking about today that is very, very disturbing. Hello, Charles. Good to have you on with us once more.
Beatrice, it's a delight to be back on your show.
Thank you. Listen, what's going on in the world of foundations? Everybody has a foundation, and all these moves are being made in the world of foundations. Donna Shalala, who was the president of the Clinton Foundation, cut ties just yesterday and is back at the University of Miami teaching full time. What's going on?
Well, it's a very interesting thing, Yatrice, and it's one of these areas where I think because in the main, most foundations and charities are well-run, and there's so many of them in the United States, and the IRS actually is relatively short-staffed, though we wouldn't want to admit it or believe it. I think the IRS, out of custom and tradition, takes the position that you know, charity land is a place where it's really not worth devoting a lot of resources because so many of them are well-run. And the problem with that is that invites the behavior we see at the Clinton Foundation and amongst the various major donors who over now 20 years, coming up on 20 years, have routed money towards the Clintons via the foundation. So we start all the way back in October 23rd, 1997, when they created this thing. And since the last time you and I have talked, I've had the chance to go back over old ground, and it really is something to interweave what Bill was doing and his team members were doing, fighting off the advance of the Paula Jones lawsuit and trying to suborn perjury in the case of Monica Lewinsky, just exactly as they created this foundation at the very same time. So the first and weakest link in the chain is that when presidents create foundations, what they have is they have situations where they control the IRS. Their political employee controls the IRS. So they don't really check the application, in my opinion, too carefully, and they speedily grant it in the case of presidential foundations. But when you go back over, as I have been doing, you're kind to mention and bring up, it's my own fault, I suppose, that I have no life. And I would venture to say that I've had no life for quite a while, more than two plus years. But anyway, When you go back over the old ground, what you see is the fatal error, one fatal error that the both the Clinton Foundation and now the Obama Foundation have done is to link their primary purpose of inception into a statute, a federal statute, which is called the Presidential Libraries Act of 1986, amending the one in 1955. That Presidential Libraries Act also refers to the Presidential Records, or you know, there's a companion statute, the Presidential Records Act of 1978. And when you read through those and read about the legislative intent of those, it becomes crystal clear that these libraries, the one that Barack Obama's team is thinking about putting up in Chicago and all the other presidential libraries, from 1981 forward, basically deal with the historical, primarily deal with the historical documents created only when the president was president. So specifically from, in Clinton's case, 20 January 1993 to 20 January 2001. These presidential libraries are solely supposed to be repositories for these presidential records, which indeed are the property of the United States of America, and never the property of the president by statute. Private donors are allowed to get together and create a foundation whose purpose is to you know, create the entity and then come up with an endowment to support the operations of the entity and turn the same over to the National Archives. And the statute does not give authority to the archivist, who has a lot of leeway, doesn't give authority to the archivist to accept any, to accept a partial interest in a facility, which is what the Clintons gave our National Archives, unless the donor is a state, a political subdivision, so I'm just from memory telling you, a foundation, an institute, an educational institute entity. Those are the only things that can grant a partial interest to the National Archives. So the question becomes, by 18 November 2004, was the Clinton Foundation a validly organized and operated foundation under our laws? And it certainly was not. It had broken
The law also stipulates that when an application is made for a presidential foundation, a library, for example, that's all it's supposed to do. It's not supposed to run off and form, like subsidiaries the way corporations do, each subsidiary having separate functions, and then they go ahead and raise money for that ostensibly, which is what happened with the Clinton Foundation, and which is what I am hoping is not happening or will not be happening with the Obama administration. You have had an opportunity to look at the application for the Obama Library. What do you see? Do you see any irregularities there?
I do, and I've already, it happens, and I'm not going to say who it is, but it happens that I know one of the key directors of the Obama Foundation, and I've warned him repeatedly that there is a serious error in the application and in the termination letter. As you rightly point out, Yatrice, a foundation of any kind must have only specific purposes. It can't say, I'm going to do whatever I decide to do tomorrow morning. It's got to say, you know, these are the specific purposes for which I have been formed, and I will achieve these purposes. Indeed, there is a publication of the IRS called The Lifestyle, either of a charity or a foundation, which explains that foundations are supposed to be created, they form, they address their purposes, and unlike government, they achieve their purposes and they go out of existence. So you must only pursue charitable purposes. If you and I create a foundation to savor, you know, the delicacy of fine wine, that is not a foundation. You and I create something to, you know, to boast about our charitable goals, that also is not a foundation. And it's very clear, you don't have to look through a lot of case law. There's actually centuries of tradition that refined the list of charitable, acceptable charitable purposes, first under English law in 1601, and then later under our law, which, you know, in relevant part concerning charities, slavishly follows English law. We have said this is, some things are charities and others aren't. So a museum to study the historical papers that are the property of the U.S. people and government is certainly charitable. An entity to develop the business of Indian generic pharmaceutical companies and of test kit manufacturers for HIV/AIDS is certainly not a charity. And you can't do both. This is something that people try to brag about, you know, that you could do so-called venture philanthropy. There's no such thing. You can create, if you have a charity and you do it and you operate, you're organized properly from day one and operated properly all the time, you can create a subsidiary that engages in venture capital and other types of investments, provided that all of the profits are routed towards the approved charitable purposes of the mothership. You can't say, well, all right, I'll create a charity, and then over here I'm also, at least under our law, you can't do that. You also can't go and do as they've done and start creating joint ventures inside and outside the country that are unregulated, not properly formed, where you haven't told the authorities all the defects in the charity. You haven't told the authorities who is really running the charity. You haven't created audits. You can't do that yet. This started with Bill Clinton and you know, his team, Bruce Lindsay and others around him. And those who remember the history will remember that Bruce Lindsay was the key, you know, consigliere who, under the Clinton era, fought off all the scandals and concocted all these crazy arguments about privilege, you know, executive privilege and this privilege and, you know, all protective service privilege and all sorts of things that eventually were struck down by the Supreme Court in most cases. So, you know, this started with them. And then what, and I will call it, these are charity fraudsters. And what they do is they taint everyone who gets involved with them and put them in a place where they can't expose the fraud, because if they do, it hurts them. So the number of people tainted by this, include other presidents, HW and W, that both have foundations, both have engaged in joint ventures with this charity fraud. The Bush people were more careful, but, you know, like, not being a little bit pregnant, you can't be a little bit involved in charity fraud. Once you're involved in it, you're involved in it. And the other thing they did is they're very clever. You know, they figured out, as others have in the past, that in actual fact, prosecutorial discretion in the United States of America rests in very few hands. You know, ultimately it rests at federal level with the Attorney General, the Department of Justice, and his people, maybe not him precisely or her precisely, but, you know, a senior-level group, particularly for politically sensitive cases. It's at the very top. And then in the states, there are 50 states in D.C. We could debate whether there's any law in D.C. You know, it doesn't take very many people. And then if you corrupt the IRS, which I submit they've done, at least in this country, you're safe. And it happens. There's just, I think it's no small coincidence that in the states that have high tax rates, they tend to be controlled by Democrats. And some Democrats dislike the Clintons. But in the main, you know, when you get together and it's a question of exposing this machine or not, you'll shut up rather than prosecute. So for a long time, I call it the Uniparty. The Bush wing and its allies in the Republican Party and the Clinton wing have been successful in covering this up. And the danger for them here is that this isn't like, you know, you'll remember when Hillary magically discovered in the personal wing of the White House those missing billing records. Just happened to be, you know, days or minutes after the statute of limitations expired. In this case, there is no statute of limitations, the way my lawyers tell me. There isn't. Because when you submit an application to form a charity, it must be truthful in all material respects, complete, truthful, and accurate. And the IRS has a right at any time to go back and look at the file and say, wait a minute, this isn't true. It's materially untrue, and you change your purposes without telling us. So we're going to go back, and we're going to call you for what you are. You're not a charity. You're a corporation. You owe corporate income taxes. And all you big, smart donors, from the Gates Foundation to the Rockefeller Foundation to the Alphawood Foundation, I could go on and on and on, Walmart Foundation, all of you, you owe us back taxes, interest, and penalties. And by the way, Clint, all your trustees, you know, you're going to be personally liable because there's no indemnification for fraud, this kind of fraud, this kind of systemic, corrupt enterprise behavior. We're going to make an example of you. And I hear, you know, that Donald Trump is looking and his team are looking for ways to narrow the budget gap. And, you know, in this thing, when you really think about its magnitude, it extends not simply in the United States, but to the various states that are believe they can influence the multilateral organizations like the World Bank, WHO, the UN, et cetera, and then, you know, siphon out money for their cronies for infrastructure projects around the world, which is, I think, you know, one of the main areas of private gain and I would argue illegal enormous, which is the appropriation by insiders of private gain, that's been going on with this thing. That's what the Clintons have been up to. It's not enough for them to, you know, try to run the largest economy in the world by Hillary. They also, I think, for decades and years anyway, have been feeding their allies into these multilateral organizations and then using their connections to access monies out of the World Bank, out of the IFC, out of various places around the world, out of the major governments. And we talked about in the past in places like Haiti and Papua New Guinea and Tsunami and elsewhere, these many tens of billions of dollars in the global fund, and they just simply disappear. There's no accounting. There's no inspector general at these institutions or at the State Department. It's just highway robbery in the guise of
charity. So now that the global initiative officially is dead, that's on paper, though. We don't know that the Clinton Foundation has shut down this arm, which is said to be one of the most lucrative arms of money and donations to this so-called charity that they had, the Clinton Foundation. What happens now in terms of inspection, and why aren't we hearing more strenuous directives coming from the Trump administration, which had been talking about lock her up, and pushing for federal indictments and so forth regarding the lack of accountability with the Clinton Foundation and the violation of the law, several laws. How come we're not hearing this kind of human cry anymore?
Well, you know, I can't explain the Trump administration, and I'm only really, though I do know some people in it, I can't really, you know, I haven't talked to them directly about any of this stuff, or indirectly, actually. My surmise is the following, that, you know, after Trump was confirmed that, you know, it was confirmed that he won, a number of insiders probably said to him, Mr. President, you know, you're a very effective celebrity, and you're a very effective campaigner, and you pulled off a major victory here, but we just want to let you know one thing. You're sort of the highest legal officer in the country, even though you don't have a law degree, and you really learn a little bit about how the justice system works, and we don't have a king. You can't, you know, I actually have a distant ancestor who really severely upset King James II, because he made it his career to just torture him after the guy took he was a prominent Virginia guy. And King James put him physically on a pretext, put him, his name's Major General Robert Beverly. He directed, you know, another ancestor, Major General Robert Smith, to arrest him because of who he was. They had him on his sailing yacht in prison. So it wasn't too much of a thing, but there were no charges proffered against him. And his experience, I'm told, is one of the reasons that habeas corpus is in the body of our Constitution, not the Bill of Rights. But so, you know, somebody probably took Trump aside and said, listen, you know, there may be something to this Clinton Foundation thing, but you know, the way our system works is we have protections against the political class, you know, imprisoning their enemies. And so you better just leave this one because it's so sensitive to Main Justice, to the IRS. You know, let the investigations take their course and let the charges bubble up to the surface. And I guess, you know, other people taught him, like, it's the first thing you do once you get into office is try to put Hillary and the Clintons in jail. Chances are you're not going to be very successful in Congress getting anything done. So you better just park this one. There's no point in putting it to the front of the line. In time, you know, let people study it objectively. You know, apparently there are these investigations. I'm told there are these investigations, you know, multiple FBI investigations, an IRS investigation, state investigations, foreign investigations. Let all this stuff bubble up to the surface. And in the fullness of time, you know, maybe as part of reforming the tax system, we ought to take a hard look at charities. Because, you know, the last time anybody did that, I think, was when there was a Tax Reform Act in 86. So it's 31 years of not really looking too closely at this. In the interim, Al Gore created the Internet, according to him. And, you know, so now there's this whole new phenomenon you're referring to of raising money over the Internet, where you assert that you're a good person and nobody checks you carefully. And, you know, tens and hundreds of millions, billions even, will come flooding over the Internet. So that's, as a guess, what happened. That Trump said, you know, look, I'd be better off just parking this one. And, you know, and then in addition, we have the problem of Koskinen, John Koskinen, is the Obama-era appointee, I think a Yale Law School graduate. Frankly, he was so arrogant and smug in the various hearings before the various committees that there was talk of his being impeached last year. He's still the leader of the IRS, as far as I'm told. Now, you also mentioned this Kevin Thurm guy as apparently taking over for Donna Shalala as head of the Clinton Foundation, and that's pretty funny as well. I mean, here's a guy who was a senior administrative officer inside Citibank, which I think needed the largest single rescue effort mounted for any of the troubled financial institutions during the 2008 debacle. Here's a guy who was in the administrative machinery then, so competent that we now want to make him head of the Clinton Foundation, which is deeply troubled. And that doesn't make a lot of sense. As far as the direct question on the Clinton Global Initiative, what these people do is they create initiatives. There's no such concept of an initiative for a foundation. You either have a purpose, which is a defined term, uppercase P, and that is what you are regulated. It has to be in your articles of incorporation what your purposes are. All initiatives, activities, any other, must solely be in pursuit of your federally authorized tax-exempt purposes. For good measure, if you operate in a state that regulates charities like Arkansas, you must also comply with the state laws in every state where you operate or solicit. And in Arkansas, you did have to fill out a form laying out your purposes. Since you and I spoke, teams of people have been combing all the states, and we have discovered multiple states where they registered in 1998, though on their IRS form they claim they didn't. And in every single case, it is crystal clear that the only purposes for which they were authorized were for the library and the museum and the study of the historical period when Bill Clinton was president, full stop. No other purposes, no health, no gabbing, you know, at these gab fests of the Clinton Global Initiative, no environmental climate change stuff, no obesity, none of that. All it was supposed to be is a library and museum solely in Little Rock, certainly not controlled from New York, and certainly not gallivanting around the world. That's all it was ever approved to be, and they have never changed their articles of incorporation to countenance any other than those purposes. Moreover, in multiple federal and state forms, through the years 1998 to 2003, they have repeatedly set forth that that's all their purposes were in writing. And then in addition, they have repeatedly in multiple places, that is to say legal jurisdictions, only ticked the boxes for being a museum and a library and, you know, related stuff. Where you have opportunities on these boxes to tick things like international, they never ticked that box. And they never ticked the multiple health-related things, multiple environmental, none of those ever ticked. So, you know, this is what they call an ultra vires, outside the scope of the law, operation. All these activities, in particular, especially through 2004 when they built this foundation, you know, the main complex in Little Rock, none of that was done properly. And when you're, you know, like building a house, if the foundation is falling apart, the structure is never going to be right, no matter what you do to it. And that's the basement of this foundation is rancid. It's got, you know, it's got every kind of rat, vermin, and you name it in the bottom, not to mention, you know, asbestos and toxic water. So
well, now that Hillary has essentially departed, quote unquote, I'm using that as I don't believe she is going to depart or actually leave the foundation, but she has announced that she no longer is going to be affiliated with it, and the responsibility for what's left of the foundation going forward would be the responsibility of Bill and Chelsea. What do you see as where Hillary is going to go next in the philanthropic world?
I appreciate that this is a G-rated conversation, so I will not answer that question directly. But but I would like to gather my thoughts as I try to make sure that I behave properly. And just you have broken some major news there. And I promised I would share the specifics with your listeners for the first time. We have a fellow who is helping me and is doing great work has uncovered a filing a document that was completed on the 10th of September 2015. So, in the midst of the primary season, the primary season was approaching, that was only filed in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania on the 2nd of December 2016 after the election. Wherein, and so far we've found no evidence of it in any other state. It's possible it's, in the work in process rooms of various states waiting to be put online. But this document is explosive. What it does is it theoretically attempts to transfer via the bylaws for lawyers. I'm not a lawyer, but I've, had enough on this that I feel like I, understand the law. In a foundation, you cannot change its purpose or radically alter the organization other than by doing so in the Articles of Incorporation. And the Articles of Incorporation of a foundation in every state where it operates and solicits must be made available. So you can check, and the purpose is you can check, the solicitation that they're asking to do something. Are they authorized to do that? So what they did, these sneaky people, and I would guess with, if they used a serious law firm, shame on the law firm. They took what is called a public charity, that is, it is, it's not the Gates Foundation. This is not created with Clinton money, although some money has gone toward it from the family. This is public money, and so it's therefore called a public charity. You can't transfer control of a public charity as a dynastic institution. You can't say, create the Utrecht Public Charity, take money from the Utrecht Leeds Foundation and transfer it to, people named either Utrecht or Leeds. You can't do that. And yet that's what they did in the sneaky document. They turned it an entity that is, lawfully or in theory was lawfully organized as a public charity and gutted it by saying that for they created two classes of stock, at least if this thing was perfected, and two classes of director, and they appointed Chelsea and Bill as Class A directors for life. All decisions in the charity have to be approved by at least one Class A director. The Class A directors can only remove themselves, and the Class A directors have the right to appoint one more director. So they're always going to be, will always under this structure be Clinton family control of a public charity. A serious lawyer would look somebody in the eye and say, you just simply can't do that. And what you've done has no legal force in effect because it's gross violation of numerous laws. Nonetheless, they filed this document in Pennsylvania on the 2nd of December 2016. And here's the problem. By doing that, in our judgment, my judgment and those working with me, they created what's called a material adverse event because they continued to fundraise in 2016. In fact, Bill stepped it up in the month of December and offered to match donations in that time period after this was filed in Pennsylvania. And the trouble is, as of yesterday when I checked, the 2015 forms for New York, which were due on November, 15, 2016, have still not been filed. This radical alteration in the bylaws has not been disclosed in New York, a key fundraising state, in California, a key fundraising state, in Illinois, as far as I know, and many other states. So far, it's only been disclosed in Pennsylvania. And Mr. Thurm, the new CEO, was the chief administrative officer when this happened, and I think actually he may have even signed that filing in Pennsylvania. So that's kind of a dumb move. I mean, that's like, I don't know, got match point against you in tennis and you double fault as a server. I mean, that's really stupid stuff. You can see it for yourself on the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania filings. We've already taken them off the site, printed them out. They may attempt to remove them, but they did indeed file on the 2nd of December 2016 that document. So as to Hillary, you know, I'm sure that the Clinton family is waits every morning for your to see who's on your show, and when they find out that I'm on the show, they can't wait to listen to my advice. But my advice, for what it's worth, is that, you know, she has had a long period in the public eye. She now has, you know, some grandchildren. They've, for now, got a fair amount of money. I would enjoy my remaining time on Earth is what I do, and I would stop wasting time and diluting the resources of the Democratic Party trying to suggest that Clintons are going to run again for political office because, you know, it's gratuitous advice, but all you're doing is helping the Republicans. You're draining the resources. You know, every dollar spent on the Clinton campaign is a dollar wasted, based on what I see.
You have a person who was a Secretary of State, who was an attorney herself, and who should know that she is actually breaking the law. She's married to another director who was not just a lawyer, he was the attorney general of the state and then president. So these are not people who could claim ignorance of the law. They purposely devise ways they think that would help them get around the law. Are there ways for public organizations or individuals to question this move?
Absolutely. I mean, and, you know, I'm hard at work on them. I mean, one very interesting approach that I can't say, you know, is formally launched yet, but I will guess is going to happen because it's a very smart thing to do. The way our laws are written, you know, a number of, I don't know how many years ago, the laws and regulations governing foundations were tight. It used to be in the, you know, early days of foundations when tax rates were very high, rich people would create foundations, take a large tax deduction, and then people the foundation with friends and other people, and there wasn't much scrutiny of what was really going on. And then, you know, claim that they were making grants to entities that they said were charities but weren't really charities. So the rules were very strictly tight. And the basic, what happens now is if you as a foundation, the Gates Foundation is a foundation, the Clinton Foundation is a public charity. It's different. If you as the Gates Foundation say, you know, I've given, you know, $150 million to the Clinton Foundation and 88 grants since 2005, then the Clinton Foundation better well have been lawfully organized and operated in that time frame, because if it wasn't, the donor, the Gates Foundation, has an obligation to get that money back, or at least to try to get the money back. And what the IRS did, because they recognized that, you know, they need to have help in policing this, is they basically enlist the deep staffs, and the Gates Foundation has, I think, over 1,000 people in it, obviously a fair amount of money behind it because it's the biggest foundation in the world. They needed to enlist these staffs to be really certain that they only gave money, not simply to charities, if they give it to charities, but to charities that were authorized to carry out the wishes of the donor. And, you know, for one infraction, and there's no issue of amount, for one infraction, the IRS will levy a very healthy fine. But for a pattern and practice of enabling this type of behavior, the IRS, you know, if it were a real IRS and not politicized the way it has been, they'd go after the Gates Foundation. And they'd say, hey, you know, we're going to shut you down. We're going to assess, well, say a $10 billion fine, and then we're going to shut you down. We don't want any of your trustees involved in charitable activities going forward. Mr. Buffett, Mr. Gates, and Ms. Gates were the three decision-making people in the foundation. And you could do that for the Rockefeller Foundation. You could do it for, you know, a lot of the Pritzker Foundation, the Alphawood Foundation. Lots of these very big donors have given much money over time to missions that the Clinton Foundation had no right to carry out, was never authorized for. And it, frankly, you know, it's taken me 2 years because I don't, you know, I'm learning on the job here, and I'm not I suppose I've become knowledgeable about charities, but I'm not the dean of the charity law bar. And, you know, because I'm not even a lawyer, but, people who understand these state laws are horrified when you talk to them. Because for far less, I mean, we talked about Corinne Brown's $800,000 problem. She faces over 300 years of federal prison, far less. You know, when the IRS makes an example of you over this, they put you away. And they really put
where
you away
you
if you're involved in...
Where do you see similarities in approach, just an administrative approach, in terms of the legal documents that form the basis for these organizations? Where do you see, if you do, any similarities between what the Clintons have done and continue to do and what Barack Obama's papers suggest that he wants to do?
Okay, that's a great question. So in the case of the Barack Obama Foundation, I would argue that its articles of incorporation are too loose. They purport to allow him to do the foundation to more or less do what it wants to do. And you're not allowed to do that with a foundation federally tax exempt foundation. You're not allowed to have overly broad purposes. Because if you do, you create this mess that we have in the Clinton Foundation. So I would argue that it should never have been authorized in the way it was authorized. Now, that then gets you into the question of, you know, was Loretta Lynch doing her job? Was the IRS doing its job properly? You know, what about this Lois Lerner person? Was, you know, under Barack Obama, you know, was the Department of Justice and the IRS corrupted? So I would argue that the fact that it received a determination letter on the basis of non-compliant application should not, you know, mean that you can never go back and reopen the case. So that's the first issue. The purposes are overly broad. And, you know, the language is such that it gives Barack Obama and his people the opportunity to go and, you know, if he wakes up tomorrow morning and decides that he wants to fight people who are against the opera in New Jersey, you know, which is not really a charitable purpose, maybe he could try and say that was something that he's authorized to do by the broadness of this charter. And so I warned this trustee. I said, first of all, you know, you better check. You may have gotten legal opinions when it appeared that, you know, Hillary Clinton was going to be president succeeding Barack Obama, but there's a different team in town who are tough constitutionalists, strict interpreters of the Constitution and laws and regulations. They're not going to buy this approach. That's step one. Step two, I don't know. The Clintons are powerful.
I was just boasting about we have new connections and new wires, and poof, you went into thin air.
Sorry about that. The Clintons are powerful, huh? Anyway, so I think I was talking about Sir Tom Hunter, and you know the whole story on Sir Tom Hunter. When you get into it, his background, how he made this money, how he pledged the money, how he became a knight, how he's operated this foundation. Whether that foundation is properly, the Hunter Foundation is properly organized and operated in Scotland where it's based, whether the various ventures with the Clinton Foundation were properly organized and operated, and I say they weren't. I warned this trustee, I said, if Barack Obama's first foreign speech is before the Tom Hunter Foundation, that is a major league error. You know, go do it. But, you know, make my life even more fun. But, you know, it's a big mistake because in the WikiLeaks, I think we talked about it a little bit, there were multiple cables where people around the Clintons during the campaign were concerned about the Clintons continuing to be involved with the Hunter Foundation because it's as we discussed, a venture philanthropy. You know, so it's these operations down in Africa are you know, appear to be supporting for-profit operations in these countries. And that is not cricket. You know, the way they've done it is certainly not appropriate.
Well, that's one thing. And as we have discussed, and this is my strong point here of objection, when they operate in Africa and the Caribbean and other nations of color, there's a particular vengeance, it seems, a vengefulness about, just raw, unbridled, uncaring, ideas and ways of operating in these countries. And the only thing it seems that they wanted to do under the cover of philanthropy was make money with very seedy people doing really atrocious things, like the AIDS program and the Health Initiative program and so forth, where so much money was on the line. You've talked about the fact that you estimate that in the course of the life of this foundation so far, where people were giving money to the foundation, clearly as pay to play for political favors, through Hillary and as then Secretary of State and Bill Clinton, the former president, and the grooming of Chelsea Clinton for some kind of political life, that it is not an understatement to say that at least several, you said it you estimated the amount of money passing through the foundation and its various satellite programs surpassed $1 trillion. I can't handle how it is that a foundation that is supposed to be in a specific segment of the economy, if you will, or being supervised or regulated, duly regulated, operating so long in so many spheres that at least $1 trillion could have gone through their hands, and still we don't have any accounting for where the money came from, where it went, and where it still might be.
Well, that's the sad reality as I've come to look through this. I mean, I started in on this with GE and GM and AIG and some big, complicated multinationals, and I quickly came to realize that our Securities and Exchange Commission and the other entities that in theory regulate these complex multinationals just aren't up to the task. They don't have the money, they don't have the time, they don't have the accounting depth, they don't have the determination. And after all politicians, most politicians need money to run their campaigns and get reelected. So, the corporate sphere there's the appearance of regulation, but it's not really regulated. In the health sphere, we talked about HIV/AIDS, and I've come to realize that now, the FDA is not up to the task of really regulating these foreign drug manufacturers, and in particular the crooked ones in India and elsewhere that are flooding this country, in some cases with supposedly legal generic drugs, and in other cases with these opioids. And so that's an area. And now with charities, same idea. So we have the appearance of regulation, the appearance of lawfulness, and that's here. We've descended in recent decades from being very top of the list on our corruption scale, but I would guess we're still in the 20s out of 200 countries. Think of the way that business is conducted in Chechnya, or you pick it, a crooked country, really crooked, Haiti or, Zimbabwe or Papua New Guinea or Bangladesh. I mean, people expect their politicians to be crooked. So when you create something called the William J. Clinton Presidential Foundation in countries where there are indeed natural resources below the ocean or below the earth or in coastal waters, these crooks around the world say, this is perfect. It'd be a beautiful thing. I'll get my picture, with Bill Clinton. I'll put a big poster on the wall and let everybody know how powerful I am when connected to the biggest country in the world and the president. And the future president, and presto chango, I'll do whatever I want. And there's a market in this. There's a market in corruption, and it's really disgusting. There's an article, I have to just tout our mutual friend Richard Pollack has a great piece in the Daily Caller today about Grameen Foundation, which is a complete fraud, and how when the Muhammad Yunus, who actually won the Nobel Prize in Peace Prize in 2006, I believe, for his micro-lending approach. The whole concept of micro-lending is completely bogus. It's impossible to check those numbers. And, people around the world, the rich world, look at that and say, micro-lending, that sounds good. I'll give them some money. So masses, hundreds of millions went to Grameen. And the place was so crooked that the government of Bangladesh, which is not exactly Switzerland, or whichever the number one country is, basically severely disciplined and kicked this guy out of control of his own charity. What was Hillary's reaction? According to WikiLeaks and now Pollock's story, their aides put pressure on the government authorities in Bangladesh and on relatives of those authorities, threatening relatives in the U.S. with an IRS audit or IRS attention, and tried to back Yunus, even though the Bangladeshis tried to put him in prison. And by the way, Grameen, none of its filings anywhere in the world are properly done, particularly here in New York, where they've illegally filed multiple documents.
Well, you've given us some things to think about, and you've certainly given us the impression that you're kind of watching things the way you watched Wall Street in 2007, 2008, and pinpointed the major corporations that eventually brought the whole system down with their fraud, overvaluing their stocks by hundreds of billions of dollars. We are in tenuous economic times, so I will ask you to prepare to receive a call from me to walk us through what we ought to be watching in this economy as we see clear signs that we're in for some trouble, big trouble, and explain this thing to us.
On two conditions, because I did listen to the beginning of your broadcast. The first is no more lies and no more bar fights. You told people that you had an accident with a hand. Well, you know the real story. I'm kidding.
But I did get a good solid right hook in. lots of more bar fights. Okay, I'll behave. I'll behave myself.
I'm at your beck and call.
I thank you so much for being with us today, Charles, and for taking us a step. We, of course, now have a kind of duty to keep track of the newest foundation that we ought to be watching, which is now officially on the radar screen, and that is Barack Obama's foundation. So we'll be watching that. We'll be monitoring what's going on with the Clinton Foundation and other projects that we have been looking at from time to time. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Idris. Have a great day.
You too. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. I hope you found some worth in it. By the way, we just broke major, major news involving Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation, in which we got said a number of things that have been pending and just floating in the air, and nobody is following up within the government. They're letting these folks conduct and benefit from one of the largest frauds in history. That says something. And they're able to walk around as if nothing is happening. And Hillary is being reborn, and she's dressed up and giving lectures, and as if, you know, just life just goes on. She's free as a bird. That tells you something about this country. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. We see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.